former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in, everybody. It's another hour of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Back with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi Abebefe today. We know Femi's out on, you know, in the land of a thousand lakes in Minnesota. He's enjoying his time off, Michael. We know that. So
yeah.
Shout out, Femi.
And deserves it. Yeah. I mean, we all deserve it, right? You get a little vacation time. Good for him, right?
Yeah, I will be up in that area as well, northern Wisconsin, come August. So very, very excited for that. Little lake time, little golf. Yeah, today actually snapped our streak, Michael. 294 straight days of sub 100 degree temperatures in Las Vegas. Longest, I believe, in over 60 years. So that is now over. In case
there you go.
In case I celebrated by playing some golf yesterday because, you know, we kind of had to. It was the last day where we felt normal on the golf course. So had to do that. And we will, speaking of Las Vegas, we will speak from one of Las Vegas' finest bookmakers, Vinny Maliulo, coming up in a half hour. The Sports Betting Hall of Famer, Vinny Maliulo, joins us from the South Point on the second half of our show today. Have some headlines I want to get into, Michael, to kick off the show. You know, I was on with Adam Burke yesterday, right as this news broke. We were doing our VSiN Best Bets. It was our NFL Betting Guide release special, since the VSiN NFL Guide is now out, available for our VSiN Pro subscribers. And I was getting into some of my concerns with the Tennessee Titans, and it was right as the suspension comes down. So Nicholas Petit-Frere, projected starter, on an already banged up and question mark riddled Titans offensive line coming into 2023, 6-game suspension for betting. And it wasn't even on NFL. He was betting on other sports, but was doing it on team property in the team facility. And he basically came out with a statement, said he had no idea that was part of the NFL rule and policy. So what do you make of this whole thing? Is this NFL overstepping their bounds or just being too rigid with the rules here? Is their own betting partnerships continue to expand?
I mean, he took accountability for his actions, which you appreciate, you know, but he said he didn't know. Now, I think you got to go back and look at who presented the information to him. I think that would be fair to him. He claims, look, every player claims they didn't take PEDs when they get suspended too, right? But they end up having it in their bloodstream. How it got there, I don't know, you know, but he should have known because everybody's aware of the fact that you can't bet in the building. I mean, that's what happened in Detroit too. So there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect, right? The players are doing this and they're saying, we didn't know. Does that mean the teams aren't really being very instructful in terms of educating the players on what the rules and regulations are as it relates to gambling? But, you know, this is going to be, look, the Titans are in kind of a transitionary state. They kept Tannehill under contract for his full $25 million. They did not renegotiate that deal, partly because they don't want to carry any more money into future years in terms of Tannehill and having him have debt on their cap going forward. Okay. So they didn't touch it. So he's a very healthy cap number. Now they didn't keep him around. All this Will Levis conversation that Will Levis is going to play is kind of ridiculous because they wouldn't have kept Tannehill at $25 million on their cap if they're going to play Levis. And maybe Levis ends up becoming the player, but I don't think he couldn't beat out Sean Clifford at Penn State. How the hell is he going to beat out Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, after his fall in the draft as well. Yeah, I totally understand. And it's why I looked at, we're talking about some of these season-long player totals, and one I like to go under is Derrick Henry's rushing yards, which is at 1,150.5 this season, a guy who has seen his production start to fall off with now a new offensive coordinator. No, you know, you fire who they had last year, and you think about, like, well, is Tennessee really going to be in a position to just let Henry ram into a poor offensive line for 3 yards in a cloud of dust a bunch of times this year as he approaches age 30? I just don't see that being realistic. They're going to have to be more creative in how they get the ball to Henry. He had his most receiving yards of his career a season ago, and the Petit-Frere suspension now, first 6 games of the year, that certainly doesn't help what I view to be one of the weaker O-lines in the league, Michael. So I don't know how you view
they've been a bad offensive line for a while now, even when they had Taylor Lewan at left tackle. I mean, they haven't been very good. I mean, Tannehill's taken a beating, let's be clear. Mm-hmm. They've been a run-action play line, right? So now they take Andre Dillard, who never played at Philly, really, even though he's a first-round pick. They're going to play him at left tackle. Paid him really well. You know, they signed Daniel Brushkill from San Francisco to play him at left guard. They drafted Skronsky, or maybe they're going to move Skronsky over to right tackle now, you know, and then try to find someone else to play in that guard position, which would make some sense because they're going to have to do something at right tackle because of the suspension. But I, you know, this is another team that changed offensive coordinators. Tim Kelly comes in, but I don't think you could change who you are at Tennessee when you have the big guy in the backfield. We had Will Hill on yesterday, and Will Hill was talking about going the under 1,200 yards on Henry, and I made the point, look, you know, it's 17 games. It doesn't take a lot to get to 1,200 yards, especially when your offense is set up that it's got to play a certain way. I mean, that's really the one thing about Tennessee is they have to play a certain way. If they don't play that way, they're not going to, if they get behind or if they have to throw it all the time, they're in trouble. So they're kind of married to Henry unless they let Henry go. Now, look, I love the Spears kid from Tulane who they drafted, but he's a good change of pace back. I don't think they're going to transition right to him.
Totally fair. And that's just where I wonder, will we see more usage in a receiver role for Derrick Henry, who was able to add some explosive plays last year? I know that's not his traditional set of usage out of the backfield, but maybe with the new offensive coordinator, understanding we don't want to get away from the focal point of our offense, but can we use him in more optimal spots? Since last 2 years, his yards per carry have gone way down and have probably, you know, they've been boosted by a couple of those, you know, those big runs where he just breaks a, you know, 60, 70 yard run. That's happened for Derrick Henry to keep that yard per carry average of just barely over four. So that's the concern I would have and wonder, can they still use him effectively, even if it means the rushing yards are maybe a little bit lower this season. But again, that's kind of what we're talking about on the, you know, the whole gambling front. And it led to our producer, Brian Ortega, did want to bring up a couple of tweets here. And I know you're a big fan of Pro Football Talk, Michael, so we can see this. But it was Jonathan Jones who basically started to make the case from the player's perspective. And I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen this earlier from players saying, like Jonathan Jones said, I understand rules are rules, but if I can risk my life so that my team wins, but I can't risk a dime on my team winning, shrug emoji. And so it's a slippery slope, though, isn't it? Like, I mean, come on.
I mean, I think that's – look, we have the integrity of the game. And you're risking – you know, you the there's rules in every job. You know, you and I work here at DraftKings. We have to go through compliance training. There's rules. And so you live by those rules. That's what it is. This isn't, you know, if you don't want to work in the NFL, you don't have to live by the rules. I mean, and so the commissioner has to protect the integrity of the game. You know, they're trying to win games, right? But how do you separate who's trying to win games and who's trying to win money? Like, that's a really hard thing to do. And I think that's a little naive for anybody to support that theory. You know, I love the fact that you want to win games, but you can't bet. That's not something we're going to do because it's a slippery slope if you go down it.
Definitely.
And so, like, why, you know, why would it be okay? Look, I want you to be fully invested and bet on yourself, but you can't do it because it just isn't right. It has a bad optics to it because how do you separate the people that are trying to make money from the people that are supporting their team? You can't.
Yep. Well, and you can always make the case too. And this is what, I mean, you go, this goes back to the 80s with Pete Rose, who, you know, I've done a betting podcast with now for the past year plus, and he's been very open about admitting it. Like, even though people came to his defense saying, well, he was betting on his team. Well, what about the days where he wasn't? I mean, and that's where you go into the integrity part of it. Here was the tweet, by the way, from Pro Football Talk, in case you wanted to see it, Michael, basically saying the insider information is irrelevant, as if to say, okay, well, hey guys, here's the plan for today. We're going to try to score more points than the other team. Basically making the argument that there is no such thing as insider info when you see a guy
Bet on
his
Stop.
Team. So, yeah.
Stop. If you know a guy's injured, if you know they're playing a, you know, like, let's take, for example, let's take the Lions versus the Panthers in week 16 or 17. The safety, she didn't play. So they had a backup safety in there and they ran for 350 yards. Like, that matters. Like, that matters. If it didn't matter, why would teams not want anybody coming to their practice? Like, I mean, come on. I mean, that just shows you don't even know what you're talking about. Like, seriously. Every game has strategy to it. Football is a game where it's offense versus defense and the clock. There's three elements to the game, and there's strategy in those three elements. Like, it's not about scoring more points. It's how are we going to play the game? That's kind of a naive statement, Ben. Really, that's really a ridiculous statement.
Well, it's like, I consider and believe, you know, believe – two different things can be true at the same time. Like, is it ridiculous that the NFL's, and, you know, Nicholas Petitfrere didn't realize it, whatever, or, you know, claim to have not realized it. Is it ridiculous in one sense that you cannot bet on a legal sport that is not football in your own team's facility? It seems kind of a very rigid, archaic rule. I can believe that, while at the same time believing that the slippery slope we're talking about, it's a ridiculous notion to throw out and start saying, all right, yeah, players, because it's legal and we have partnerships, sure, just start betting on your team whenever you feel like it, and that's totally fine. Both of those statements can be true.
They're trying to have rules, unlike college football and college basketball, but there's no rules. It's an open sport, you know? And so it doesn't look right. And when you're dealing with the integrity of the game, you know, I mean, you don't want to make this worldwide wrestling, you know? So I think it's important. I really do. I just think anybody who thinks that teams don't have insider information when they play is really, really doesn't understand the game of football.
Yeah. You think for Jonathan Jones with the Patriots, who, by the way, had that tweet about, hey, why can't I just bet $1,000 on my own team to win? Do you think anyone from the Patriots talked to him about that, or does Bill Belichick not really care?
Well, I think the point you raised earlier about, you know, Tennessee is, I think the players have the right to investigate, were they being taught this? You know, we see it in Detroit. Now, we see it in Indianapolis. I mean, where's the slide presentation? Where is, you know, who went over the rules and what was on those slides and what was talked about in those meetings? You know, I think the players have a right to that investigation, because if they weren't told that you can't bet in the building, you can't fault them for doing it.
I totally agree. So, because, I mean, we know how these teams, I mean, they try to maximize every single second that they have with their players. And you really think Bill Belichick sitting in the lecture hall, like, all right, guys, here are the don't bet.
Oh, he's going over the rules now.
Now
you're going over the rules in those meetings. I've been in them. You're going over the rules to make the players aware of it.
Especially after what has happened over the past couple of weeks. So six rules that have been laid out now by the NFL with their gambling policy as a whole. All right, we still have some more to get to as far as NFL topics on this hour. Michael's going to defend himself. That is our segment when we come back, talking about three AFC teams to the playoffs. We'll discuss next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Still to come on the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back. I'm Ben Wilson in for Femi Abebefe. We'll talk with Vinny Maliulo, the Sports Betting Hall of Famer, in 15 minutes. But right now, Michael, our producer Brian Ortega has come up with a very fun segment called Defend Yourself. Not that you need to defend yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, your credentials speak for themselves. But with our newly released NFL betting guide now out, I always like when we – because I always fear being that person who's like, okay, all 20 of our experts picked the Chiefs to win the AFC West. All right, I'm going to bet the Chiefs to do that. I always fear that because the NFL is just naturally a league where changes happen every single year. There's been a team that goes worst to first, it seems like, almost every season over the last decade in a particular division. So I like it when people are more out there and make against the grain predictions. To me, it is the way to go when you're making predictions. And as bettors, if there's a team you really, really like or a team you really, really don't like, you know, there's no bad part of just putting your flag in the ground, staking your claim, and making a bet that reflects that, because there is a lot that could change. So defend yourself. It's an idea that we came up with. And the big thing you have that maybe goes against the grain here, Michael, is that you have three AFC East teams making the postseason this year: Buffalo, Miami, and New England. So I'll ask you, all right, defend yourself. What makes you like this AFC East division so much heading into the year?
Well, I mean, I like Buffalo's team. I think Buffalo's team, this is a make or break year. I really do. I'm not certain that Sean McDermott taking over the play calling on defense is going to be works out well for them, but I like their team. I like Josh Allen. I worry they're not going to be able to stay healthy. Last year with Mekhi Hyde and Jordan Poyer getting injured really affected their team. Are they going to be good enough up front? We saw Von Miller playing out there coaching the golfers up yesterday. He seemed healthy to me. So I like the Bills. I don't love the Bills. The Jets, I think, will be an improved team. I think Aaron Rodgers, you put them on his team, they will be better. I love the Patriots defense. I really do. I think the Patriots defensively can be a good team. And I think the way they manage the game, the way they'll play the game week in and week out, I think they have a chance to get there. So, look, you could make a case for all four teams mm-hmm. here. And Miami, the doubt is, can Tua stay healthy? And can they play the style that they need to play to help their defense a little bit? Because I think Vic Fangio is going to make a huge difference in Miami, especially with Jalen Ramsey at one corner, Xavier Howard at the other. Look, these are all four good teams. I started my prediction point to defend myself here, Ben, with the idea that 50% of the teams that made the playoffs last year probably aren't going to make it this year. So that's really what I did, because every year that seems to happen come NFL playoff time.
It's been a consistent trend. I mean, over and over and over. It's not just some one-off thing. That is what you usually tend to see, a lot of turnover from one postseason to the next. Yeah, the Miami is the team I wanted to get into because they fired Josh Boyer, who was essentially running, let's just call it what it was running the Brian Flores defensive scheme with ridiculously high amounts of blitzing, but it left them extremely vulnerable and exposed in the back end when they were unable to get home on quarterbacks. And it also created this setup where we saw so many Dolphin games go over. Remember last year, totals were in the mid to high 50s because they gave up points in mass. Their offense was very explosive as well. And you had this up-tempo, high possession type back and forth games with Miami. Isn't there a thought that with Vic Fangio now coming in, whose defenses tend to play, if you go back to his time as a coordinator, much, much different. They were consistently in the top 5 or 10 in slowest pace allowed against. Essentially, they were forcing opposing offenses to take their time. They weren't able to get up to the line and really press the needle against their defense with how smart they were able to play back, basically forcing opposing offenses to take the throws in front of them and not give up the big explosive play. Won't that impact the game state and flow as well? Don't you think that is going to have an impact on how the offense sets up for Miami if all of a sudden we start to see lower possession games? And you start to see less situations where Tua Tagovailoa and that offense will be really forced to air it out and try to play this catch-up explosive type game.
I don't think they – to me, last year – first, let me start off by saying I think Josh Boyer – you know, one of the reasons I don't think Brian Flores is the head coach is because Josh Boyer, you know, wanted to run the defense. And so Josh Boyer and Brian Flores, they're kind of not on the same wavelength defensively. When Brian Flores took over the defense from Boyer 2 years ago, they went from being that zero blitz team, which was ridiculous, to playing a little bit more conservative zone blitz, doing some things. They still took chances. And then Flores gets fired, Boyer gets promoted, wonder why. And then all of a sudden, they just go into a zero blitz and they can't cover. I mean, Xavier Howard can't cover. They couldn't cover anybody. And if their front, which is pretty good, didn't get pressure, then it became a real issue. And that's why people were able to take advantage of them. And then compound the fact that McDaniels never slowed the game down. You know, they were 31st in rushing attempts last year. So, you know, to me, that you've got to be able to slow a game down. You've got to be able to control the pace of the game. You know, it can't be just we're going to throw the ball to Hill and Waddle. Like we just can't do that. Like, we have to slow the game down a little bit to help our defense. I think they're better defensively this year. I love the addition of David Long. I think he's really a good inside linebacker. He gives them more speed inside. He's a better player inside the defense than what they've had in the past. So, especially when you look at Landon Roberts, who started there last year. And then, Chubb should be healthier. Now, mm-hmm. Zeiler is a kid who's a good player. They're going to have to get him under contract. Jalen Phillips is a good player. The question's going to be, can Howard hold up on the outside? Nobody's going to throw the ball at Ramsey. Everybody's going to attack Howard, and they're going to attack their nickelbacks, whether it's Needham or someone else. So I think that's the question. But let me go back to the beginning, and one of the reasons I'm not a big Miami fan is because McDaniels doesn't operate as a head coach. He operates as the offensive coordinator. Just you could see the way they called the game last year. In fact, McDaniels will tell his coaching staff, look, you know, Vic's going to run the defense, Danny's going to run the special teams, and I run the offense. I think you have to coordinate that as a head coach and work mm-hmm. together. I mean, what he did with the quarterbacking situation in the playoff game, I mean, to basically ask Skylar Thompson to go in there and throw the ball as much as he did against Buffalo on the road was really malpractice.
He's throwing them to the Wolves, and that's how the season ended for Miami. And the question now, can they get back to the postseason where they're basically a coin flip to do so? And that's why this division is fascinating, where you have four teams. You can make the case for in all four of the setups. And so, for the Jets, who you talk about your guide, Michael, what is it that is going to leave them falling short, aside from just, Aaron Rodgers maybe didn't mesh quick enough and wasn't the guy that maybe everybody was expecting him to be coming right away in gangrene?
Well, I think if the Jets have one issue next year, it's going to be in their offensive line, right? I mean, can Dwayne Brown stay healthy? Can Mekhi Becton play right tackle? I think that's going to be their biggest key. Can that happen? I'm not sure it can, right? You know, I'm not sure they're good enough up front. And then Breece Hall, what's he look like coming off the ACL? I think that's got to be a concern for them. You know, I think that's going to be really where they end up. And then where are they with Quinton Williams? To me, if the Jets don't win enough games, if they're in that 10-7 category and they're a wild card team, it's probably because their offensive line wasn't as good as they needed it to be. And their defensive front, without Quinton Williams being a dominant player, you know, is problematic. So I think, to me, that's the issue. That's what would concern me the most. But look, I like the Jets. I think it takes a little bit of time before you go good to great, right? Mm-hmm. I think you've got to be able to get good before you get great. And Aaron Rodgers will make them good. There's no question. I don't think there's going to be the Aaron Rodgers from the MVP season that you know as a Packer fan wearing your cheesehead outfit, but he's still pretty damn good.
No, of course. Yeah, that it will. I mean, he's going to give them an upgrade right away. It's just amidst a very competitive division, amidst some other issues on that team, how good can they be right away? Again, we're talking defend yourself, Michael. So your first one is three AFC East teams to make the postseason. How about one more real quick before we hit a break? You believe the Cowboys will jump the Eagles this season and win the NFC East. Defend yourself on that one, sir.
Well, I mean, look, you know, we've seen the East go upside down every single year, right?
Yeah.
And I just think, to me, I still think the Eagles are a good team. I just think, to me, the difference is people are going to prepare for Philadelphia more than they have. Last year, they caught the world by storm. I mean, 240 points in the second quarter was remarkable, right? And they're a talented team. However, that being said, new offense coordinator, new defensive coordinator, there's a lot of moving parts, right? And one thing is, when you are a Super Bowl caliber team and get to the Super Bowl, people spend a lot of time studying you. And when you get used to it, like, they run an offense that's no different than running like the wishbone, where if you don't practice it during the week and you don't work on it, it's going to be hard for you to get better at it. And so I think teams will spend more time working on it. And will it have the same impact? I don't know. But will they be as explosive in the second quarter? Look, this Philadelphia team never played from behind. If they have to run drop-back passes, where are they?
It's not like you can just magically expect to run out that same exact system and have no resistance whatsoever. We've seen that time and time again in the NFL. Eagles -110 to win that division at the moment. Cowboys +170. On the other side, time to visit with the Sports Betting Hall of Famer, Vinny Maliulo. Where is he seeing some early NFL futures interest? We'll discuss that next right here on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's always football season here at VSiN, which is why we're giving you our 2023 NFL betting guide early. It is now available. It'll help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends, plus best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and reserve your copy of the guide. Or take advantage of our summer kickoff special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl. For only $175, you can sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. As we welcome you back, so excited for this segment here. I am Ben Wilson in for Femi Abebefe on vacation starting today with Michael Lombardi. We have the Sports Betting Hall of Famer, Vinny Maliulo, joining us right now from over at the South Point Sportsbook Hotel, Casino, and Spa. And, you know, Vinny, he's a man of, you know, great interest for a variety of reasons. And you are going to be on a very special Las Vegas PBS panel, Vinny, and we have the picture here. So I mentioned it earlier, Vinny, as we welcome you in. First off,
let's see it.
Bill Ady wearing the sunglasses on the desk is amazing. I got to be honest with you, Vinny. I've spent a lot of time, you know, in local news, going back to my days in Columbia, Missouri. That pose you've got there, I mean, I don't know. Have you ever considered a career in weeknight news anchor? Because you would fit that that bill perfect. That is beautiful form on the desk of a Nevada Week on Vegas PBS.
Well, thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate it. Good to be with you and Michael. And, yeah, that's a photo there with over at the local PBS office. You mentioned Bill, and of course the other folks. Amber Renee Dixon is the moderator, and we got Patrick Everson, and you know, I've got to tell you, the thing about it that's fun is that you get asked to get on panels like that, and what's good about it is that you get to share perspectives, you know, and you get to make some points, and you get to get other people's points, and you find out that, you know what, those by the way, that's Matthew Holt from U.S. Integrity all the way on the left as well. You get to you know, kind of, if you want to call it rebut, you go back and forth, and you get to share ideas and perspectives on things. And in this case, it wasn't just about Nevada, but what's taken place around the country since PASPA was overturned back in 2018. But as far as the other career, Ben, no, because you know what, I'm going to stick to my day and night job, because right now, you know, that's right when games are tipping and kicking off. So you know that
a lot of sacrifice, Vinny. Yeah, and you know a lot of sacrifice. Of course, that's a great pick though. That is absolutely wonderful.
I love it. Thank you.
It looked like you guys were getting ready for the New Hampshire primary up there, Vinny. It looks so good. I mean,
yeah. That I would sit in on, Michael. I wouldn't mind giving it some perspective on, for sure.
We'd love that. We'd love the perspective from Vinny. Again, on all things, and speaking of your perspective, Vinny, wanted to get your take on this because Michael and I brought it up earlier. We've seen a number now of NFL suspensions come out for various violations of the gambling policy. The latest was in the Nicholas Petit-Frere of Tennessee was not betting on NFL. It was on other sports, but it was in the team facility. And we've seen multiple year-long suspensions now handed out recently. What do you make of what's been happening recently around the NFL?
Yeah, I think, I think really it could be avoided, right? Guys, I mean, the reality is this. In this day and age, you've got to know, especially with so much publicity about sports gaming and everything like that, and what teams are told. And, Michael, I know you can speak to this exceptionally well and quite directly. You've got to know what you can and can't do in your job. And I mean, to me, gambling, it's always been talked about to the players, to the teams. And I'll go back, not just in recent years, guys, for a long time, you know, Las Vegas was taboo, right? Sports betting was taboo. Now, of course, many operators around the country are partners with the respective leagues and quite frankly, the NCAA. My colleagues and I used to address the security divisions of the respective leagues and the NCAA as far back as the 1990s. What that involved was where we would go and address the corporate security elements of every team. Every team's security division, they gather every year, and they wanted perspectives. They wanted to get an overview of exactly what our industry is. And because we're and have always been licensed, we've been taxed, we've been regulated, then we were able to, you know, talk to them about what goes on here in Nevada and give them an idea. And they would always talk to their players. Part of, you know, especially rookie camps is, you know, stay away from gambling. If that's something that's a rule, then you've got to know what the rules are. I mean, if you're a player today, guys, frankly, if before you even buy a lottery ticket, you better call your agent. You got to call the GM, the coach. Mm-hmm. Just make sure that you're not treading on thin ice. It's totally avoidable. And I know that the teams go through great lengths to explain these things, and not just about the gambling. There are other vices, especially, Michael, you know, and you know, when the rookies come in, you know how these young players are going to be approached by a lot of different types of individuals for a lot of trying to get into their bank accounts and things like that. So there's a lot that they can do. I think maybe it's a case today where the Players Association and the league get more in sync and educating the players more so. But in this day and age, especially where there are no secrets by virtue of social media, before you have the Friday night card game with your buddies. Guys, figure it out, man, and make sure that you're not even close to violating a rule and a policy. I think it's totally avoidable. It's unfortunate, but whatever confusion there is, I think it's it is avoidable. That's my perspective on it.
Yeah, I, Vinny, you're right. I mean, look, this is not going away. Education is the only thing that's going to curtail it. I think the players should have known, as I said in a prior block, if they weren't told they can't bet in the building, then let's find out why they weren't told. And let's go through the data of the presentations because it's all available. So, to me, we just have to learn to coexist. And I keep saying this. This is not about the owners taking money from sports betting companies and putting it in their pocket. All this revenue goes to everybody. And so it's important that everybody works through it.
Yeah, no question about it. Listen, I have rules and policies and procedures here that I can do and that I can't do. And it's up to me to know that. I mean, if I'm, if I walk into, an area of the casino and I know what I can and can't do. And so these are things that you're signing off on policies and procedures. You're signing the employee handbook, whatever the case may be. You've got to know these things. And at this point, and especially, in recent years, the whole Calvin Ridley thing, if players are still getting suspended after what happened with him, and proceed with caution because you're only going to get yourself in trouble. There's no upside to not, to doing what they're doing. There's only downside if you're in doubt, just ask. Make sure.
Totally right. But you would have thought that the Calvin Ridley situation would have just been the giantest of all red flags, and teams would have looked at that and said, okay, and players, not to follow that again. You can follow Vinny, by the way, if you don't do so already, at VSinVinny on Twitter, along with Chris Andrews and Jimmy Vaccaro over at the South Point as an odds maker. You do have now college football, first week of games. Lines are up now at the South Point. You've had NFL up for a while. What if any action have you seen on those college football lines that are now up?
Well, again, it's week one, right? I don't, not week zero. You want zero, it's Coke Zero, if you want to drink it. But I call it week one. So starting with the games of August 31st, and there'll be some good games and some of the marquee teams that'll be playing. Ohio State's going to play Indiana. I mean, they're a big favorite, they're a 4-touchdown favorite at Indiana, but there is a conference game there. Not a lot of movement on these games, which will culminate on September 4th with Clemson and Duke, and Clemson a 12-point road favorite there. LSU against Florida in Orlando. LSU, that's on Sunday, September 3rd, guys. LSU a 3-point favorite in that game. The only game that's moved so far, Washington State, Colorado State, on Saturday, September 2nd. We open that game 16 with Washington State, the road favorite there, and they took the points in that game. We're down to 14.5. But I think we'll see some more activity this weekend with the 4th of July holiday coming upon us. We'll have over 300,000 visitors to town. You'll see a lot more play, by the way, on week one of the NFL. And some games there. A lot of games we talked about recently, guys, fluctuating around the key number of 3. Cowboys up to 3.5 off of 3.
Okay.
Against the Giants.
Good
to know. In prime time on that first Sunday night.
I'm sure a lot of futures money going to come in this week as well for the bettors coming into Vegas.
Yes, indeed.
For the July 4th holiday weekend. All right, 300,000 expected this weekend. Great to see you as always, Vinny.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
We absolutely will. We have more to get to. We'll wrap up the show next. Some final thoughts, news and notes around the NFL when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, you'll both receive a $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. As we're back for the final time, I'm Ben Wilson. Been a blast filling in for Femi Abemefe. Sorry, Bon and Tony will be back in both tomorrow and Sunday with you, Michael. So excited for the weekend edition here of the Lombardi Line. Big thanks to our producer, Brian Ortega. Everybody else helping out behind the scenes here at Circa with Jeremy, Andre, Aramis, Sergio, Mikhail. Mikhail and I just recorded a new VSiN Formula One betting podcast as well, by the way, Michael.
Yeah.
So you'll have to check that out. Got to plug that whenever we have,
I love
have
that.
The opportunity.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Plug the Formula One. Everybody loves Formula One. I mean,
does.
I can't wait for it to come to Vegas. I don't know how they're going to. I mean, it's hard to move around the strip the way it is right now.
Yeah, you might. Yeah, like order your Ubers immediately. Like start just now for whatever weekend that is. Thanksgiving weekend in November. And we have a lot more still to get to over the weekend. I know you and Stormy will talk as we have NBA free agency starting tonight, and we'll also have some more NFL news and notes to get to over the weekend. So we talked a lot and have mentioned a couple times today, Michael, with a couple of these gambling suspensions given out by the league, with Nicolas Petitfrère getting 6 games for violating the gambling policy. But we've also seen some other, as far as the news and notes here, other offensive linemen now getting some sort of suspensions. Cam Robinson of the Jaguars, 4-game suspension for PED use. And so it's a Jacksonville team that everybody is expecting to just run away with this AFC South. They're one of the biggest favorites of any division at -$1.65. It's obviously just 4 games, a small portion of the season. But any concern you'd have on that O-line to start 2023, just given some of the issues now going off field?
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why they moved up in the draft to draft Anton Harrison from Tennessee. I mean, they knew that Cam Robinson was going to get suspended. He appealed it, but they knew. You know, Walker Little, the kid last year, played right tackle, so they have that good. They put a lot of money in Brandon Schrieff, the right guard. And so that offensive line will keep coming along. I think the big addition to Jacksonville offensively is Calvin Ridley. Because if you remember Calvin Ridley going back 3 years ago, like, we know he missed last year, but 2 years ago he had that depression issue. And he was playing in Atlanta, and they weren't sure what was going on, and he missed most of that season, I think over 3/4 of it. But the year before that, he was a top 5 receiver in the league. And if you put him on this field with Zay Jones and Christian Kirk, I mean, this is a really good skill session. And Evan Ingram's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about 4 receivers to go along with a running back like ATN. So they should be fine. I mean, they prepared for this. And when they get him back, they still have Josh Wells, who's been their swing tackle for the last couple seasons. So I think they're going to be good offensively. I think defensively is where you've got to wonder, are they going to be good enough? Especially when you know that Mike Caldwell, the defense coordinator, he wants to attack the pocket. You know, he wants to try to, you know, his corner's got to hold up. And are they good enough at corner? You know, Tyson Campbell played well as a rookie last year, 2 years ago. You know, it'd be his third season. He should take a step forward. You know, but are they going to be good enough? I mean, they signed Darius Williams from the Rams as a nickel slot player. You know, they're trying to kind of piece this together, and I'm not sure they're going to be good enough. They need a big year from Travion Walker. They need that. Mm-hmm. The first overall pick in the draft, they do. So my concerns are more defensively than offensively with the Jags.
I totally get it. And you think about a team that goes from worst to first. They had a very good turnover margin. We're top 10 in the league there. And I tend to worry just in general about teams who have that bend but don't break mentality, right? Jacksonville was bottom 8 in yards per drive allowed last year, yet yeah, they finished 6th on an EPA per play basis defending the run. They were about middle of the pack against the pass. So you just naturally wonder, right, how sustainable is that to just assume, all right, you'll struggle between the 20s, but all of a sudden you'll tighten up and force turnovers in the red zone. It's a dangerous game to play, and we all just assume, well, it's a weak division. Jacksonville made the great upgrades a season ago. I'm definitely with you on that, and I find myself very hesitant just to want to lay the wood, especially at a $1.65 price on them to win a division. That sure is viewed to be weak, but we see every year teams come out of nowhere and at least challenge that might not be expected.
You know, I mean, look, they are – it's interesting. When they play against good offenses, Philadelphia, they gave up 401 yards. I mean, the Giants, they allowed 436 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the Colts game, that the Colts they when the Colts beat them the second time, the Colts gained 434 yards on them. And so – you know, to me, it's a little bit of how good are they? I think one of the things we don't do enough of, and when we're looking at stat data, is comparing the when you play against a good team. You know, it's one thing to play good defense against a bad offense, but when you have to play against a good defense, I mean, you know, they sat there and played the Lions. They gave up 437 yards and 40 points. You know, the next week they beat Tennessee 36-22, and they hold, you know, but we know Tennessee wasn't a good defense. But the game that bothers me more than any game was the last game of the year, which got them into the playoffs when they went 9-8, was that, you know, Tennessee's playing with Joshua Dobbs, and they're having a hard time winning that game.
Barely survived. And if you go even further past that, I mean, you're down 28, you're down a 28-point margin to a Charger team that basically got whatever they wanted, and only because of self-sabotage, Chargers allow Jacksonville to come back into that game. So certainly valid points to think about. I'm certainly not going to be tying up my money, especially laying a big price on Jacksonville to win the division, even if I'm a believer in theirs as a whole. There's enough red flags for me to get.
Well, who would you go with? There. Who do you like? I mean, what's your alternative is, I guess, my question. I can't see Houston. I would fall more for Indy if I thought they had a veteran quarterback. I can't fall for Anthony Richardson leading them to a playoff berth. So, like, where do you go? To me, it's Tennessee and Mike Vrabel. You're banking on Vrabel being a good coach, being the coach that we know he is.
And it's not sexy. You're the stats will not look great. The personnel does not look great. But we have seen this time and time again. And we get so infatuated, I believe, especially with Michael, when it comes into having more time to prepare for the start of the NFL season. Right? We're breaking down all the numbers. We're getting into the nitty-gritty of the positional groups. And year after year, you look at Tennessee, and you're left not very impressed. And you kind of forget the intangible that they have at coaching. And that's what you wrote about in the guide, how important coaching is, especially in the NFL. And that's where I would look at, honestly, with a coach in Mike Vrabel, who has repeatedly overperformed based on the expected value that he had in each respective position on his team.
Yeah, I mean, if he has Tannehill in the last game of the year, he's going to win that game. I mean, the whole thing fell apart was the Malik Willis, you know, and really the trade, what they got for A.J. Brown in terms of what it would have cost them to keep A.J. Brown wasn't worth it, right? And they need one thing if you're running with Derrick Henry as your lead back, you need yards after the catch receivers. You need to control the football and really blend that. And giving up A.J. Brown for basically Travion Burks is like that didn't work out. I mean, maybe Burks will be better this season. But, you know, you're giving up a proven commodity, and I think that's why John Robinson isn't working for the Titans any longer.
And you saw did not win a game after they fired their OC, and eventually fired the OC. It was after the DUI, I should say. He stayed Todd Downing the rest of the year, but that created other issues as well, and all the injuries for Tennessee like we've laid out. So that'll be interesting to watch in the AFC South. One of the little nugget I had for you, Michael, as we end the show today, this happened yesterday after you got off there, where the Patriots do extend linebacker Juwan Bentley, a defense that is already – you to be really, really solid, well above average in the league. What do you make of that deal out there out of Foxborough?
Well, I mean, he's their signal caller. We talked about that with Charlie and who's going to do that for the Bengals. I mean, he's their green dot player. So he gives them, and I thought he's improved in terms of the passing game and showing more ability to play in space. I think this is one of the areas the Patriots have spent a lot of time working on this offseason in terms of finding a way to play against quarterbacks, the six-back offense. They were 0-4 against movement quarterbacks last year. It really hurt them. You know, it really hurt them. Quarterbacks that they have to contain in the pocket, whether it's Lamar Jackson or whether it's Jalen Hurts or whether it's really Justin Fields in the last game the Bears won. So that to me is was one of the most important elements of what they have to do. And I think they've kind of fixed that a little bit, especially with the kid they drafted from Sacramento State in the third round. You know, they get Gonzalez from Oregon, their first round pick. So I like that. And I think Bentley gives them the leadership and the ability to attack the pocket as the fifth rusher on certain situations. So look, this New England defense is going to be hard to move the ball consistently down the field. If you can make big plays, great. But they're not going to be a team that you're just going to be able to just go chunk at a time, because they're really good. They'll be well coached, and they'll be able to solve some problems from within.
It's a team that certainly you don't really worry about their defense. I mean, it's the offense that's the big question mark on New England going into this year. Juwan Bentley, linebacker, he's now signed through 2025. Michael, blast being back with you. I will see you Saturday. In the meantime,
enjoy Tucson tomorrow.
Thank you. Yes, big arena football matchup. I have the call. The Vegas Nighthawks, Tucson Sugar Skulls Well, enjoy my time down in Tucson. Always a great place to go to. As our producer, Brian Ortega, well knows, native of the Tucson area. So big thanks to Brian. Thank you, Michael. Great to be with you. I'm Ben Wilson saying so long. We have VSiN Best Bets, a special Wimbledon preview edition with Dave Ross coming up next.